Blog Talk Radio.
And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught, Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings. And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
By God, welcome to another episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast. It is ECU preview time. We are looking forward to the East Carolina Pirates who come into Morgantown on Saturday, September 9th at a noon kickoff, and you can catch that game on Fox Sports 1. We're going to start things off real quick here. We're going to jump into ECU coverage. Joining me now on kind of a hotline of sorts. Nathan, can you hear me? Nathan, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, there you are. I thought I had you. We're still figuring out this Blog Talk Radio configuration, so I didn't know which button I had to press to bring you in. But thank you for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Obviously, we're here to talk about the East Carolina-West Virginia game, and you write for the Daily Reflector, which is the Greenville, North Carolina newspaper. I guess the first question I'm going to have to ask you is, where is good barbecue in Greenville?
I'm mostly a non-pig eater, so that's I've been misanswering this question for a really long time, guys. But I can tell you that from what I can sense, I've sat across a lot of people at a lot of tables eating barbecue, and I've eaten lots of chicken in most of those places.
Okay.
I got to give it to Bums, man. Bums is down the road in Aiden. It's not actually in Greenville. It's kind of out in the boondocks a little bit, but Bums is a famous one. Skylight is probably the more famous one in Aiden that's been kind of on all the TV shows nationally. But, yeah, I'm a Bums guy. That's probably one of the lesser ones. Bees is the most famous one probably here in town. We have Parker's is a really famous one, but that's kind of more of a chain, at least a local chain. But, yeah, if there's one where you've got to be there that I know for sure that you can't just mess around and show up at noon and expect to eat, it's definitely Bees. Like, you know, the line
is usually
around the corner.
I have friends who live in Greenville. Obviously, we kind of were connected through Jordan Anders, who also writes for the Daily Reflector. So if I'm there, I'll have to check that out. It wasn't a great start for the Pirates last weekend, losing to James Madison. Not a great start to the Scotty Montgomery era in Greenville as well, 3-9 last year. This is the second year. What's the assessment been?
Well, I mean, the assessment, honestly, not to sugarcoat it at all, is that there's a lot of pressure on everybody with ECU Athletics right now. When your football team is not winning and you have a young head coach, that creates, you know, all of its own pressure. But, you know, you add to that a very unpopular firing of the last coach, Ruff McNeil. A lot of people in this town, believe me, right now today are very, very mad about that still. Obviously pin that on AD Jeff Comfort. So, yeah, there's as I wrote in my column this week after the JMU loss, I mean, with every one of those losses, the weight gets heavier on everybody that's involved.
Right.
There's also, you know, millions of dollars invested. They're trying to do a stadium renovation here that they've had to delay financially.
I noticed watching the game, watching it back this week, the stadium looked a little empty. And, I mean, I've been to Dowdy-Picklin. It can get pretty packed and rowdy. It looked quite empty on Saturday.
Yeah, and it was that's been a trend for a while. I mean, that's something that obviously ECU Athletics doesn't want to talk about, but very true. And one thing to note is that the stadium renovation does not include adding any seats, which is a good idea on their part.
Very true.
You mentioned Ralphie McNeil. He is now coaching in Oklahoma under a former guy that used to be at East Carolina. But, you know, we'll talk about those two guys when we get to Oklahoma on our schedule. But just what went wrong, if anything, under Ralphie McNeil, and why did Montgomery get brought in?
Well, I mean, that's a very tough question. A lot of people are still trying to answer that one. I mean, it is tough only because the and that's what's really had a residual effect. Fired for that one losing season, basically. He had one losing season, and it was there was some perception,
right,
around the upper brass at ECU that that it was part of a, or the start of a downward trend in recruiting, and you know, there was clearly a rift that developed between Jeff Confer and Ross McNeil, and as often is the case in those rifts, the head coach is the one that ends up, you know, being sent out. But during that press conference, you know, when they announced the firing of Ruffin, Jeff Confer spelled right out that what they're looking for at ECU is to win championships in all sports,
right,
starting with football. And, you know, that's what a lot of people are so mad about, is that they were a lot closer to that then than they are right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's certainly right. I had a couple friends who played under Ruffin, and I know they were a little bummed about that. But we'll move to this season. I mean, well, I felt like there was a lot more hope going into this 2017 season for the Pirates that pretty much, I guess you could say, were dashed after the first game. But what's the general feel about the team right now?
Well, I think a lot of unanswered questions, and obviously this schedule is not a kind one. You know, you lose to JMU, which, you know, obviously was not the plan. But
right,
you lose that game and you're in the hole, and now you're going to play West Virginia and Virginia Tech in successive weeks. And believe me, everybody here, just like everyone there, watched that game with Virginia Tech and saw what a – God, that game was just such a physical spectacle. I think if there was any doubt about how tough these next two games were going to be, watching that game was an eye-opener. I also am a firm believer that when two teams like those two teams play at that high of a level on their, you know, opening night, as opposed to playing, you know, Nicholls State or somebody, I think you don't want to play, especially the team that lost. I don't think that's the team you
right.
want to play next week. So,
right.
But yeah, I think the feeling is win now, but I think that there's a lot of disbelief about when that next win is going to be after those two games they play South Florida, who everybody's got picked to win the American. So
yeah,
it's not going to get easy.
Well, I mean, you're right. Again, this is Nathan Sommer joining us. He's I guess you could say, beat writer for East Carolina, but the editor there at the Daily Reflect, covering sports for East Carolina and in the Greenville, North Carolina area. Moving to, I guess, the first game you had, 614 total yards of offense, 400 and almost 90 of that on the ground. 420 on the ground. There you go. What was that? Was that just James Madison? I mean, they won a national championship last year by running the ball extremely well. Was that a lot of James Madison, or was that a lot of East Carolina not being able to stop the run, or was it both?
I think some of both, definitely. I mean, I think James Madison has a really solid team. There's, you know, no question about it. They were a really good
right.
team. But I would also say that not that long ago, you know, we sat in Greenville and watched App State come to town. They were the defending national champion, and there was never any doubt. You know what I mean? ECU
right.
was not going to lose that game. It was never in question. And, you know, I kind of really would have expected the same thing. And, again, not to pile on these coaches at all, because I know a lot of other people are doing it already, but they had 9 months to get this right and show something different on opening night. And there were just problems all over at multiple position groups, both sides of the ball. You know, it was a mess. And so, you know, I think some part of it's JMU's talent, but there were a lot of busted plays, a lot of missed assignments. Both starting linebackers in this new 4-2-5 defense are seniors that have played a ton, and they both had bad games. I mean, they made about 20 tackles between the two of them, but they also blew a lot of tackles. So
right.
There was a lot not to like about that performance.
Well, I guess I don't know if you like it or not, but you have a new starting quarterback named Thomas Cirque, who the Duke grad transfer. Is there any connection, do you think, that will help him, being that he came from Duke, as did Scotty Montgomery?
Well, I mean, I think it was understood that when he came, you know, he's been here since the spring. you know, he came in and it was obviously kind of known immediately. That was the only thing that was known about Sirkia really was that
right.
He played 1 year at Duke and that he had, you know, a pretty darn good year as in his one and only year as a starter before the Achilles injury. But, yeah, I think it was understood, and I think it makes it not nearly as big of a surprise that they've made the switch from week one to week two, is that there was a relationship there. Scotty Montgomery coached him when he was at Duke. So that good year that he had, Scotty was right there with him. And I think anytime you have that kind of credit built up with somebody, you're going to be inclined to give that guy a chance. So I don't know how quick of how short of a leash Minshew was on last week or what ultimately made the decision for them to change at halftime, but you got to believe that it was, you know, pretty short and that they were, you know, they knew that Sirk was coming in there if things weren't going well.
Well, we saw the changes. I don't know if it helped or whatnot in the game exactly, but an experienced guy has an entire week to prepare for an offense or for a defense and prepare his offense. Mm-hmm. How do you think that Sirk will affect this game on Saturday?
Well, I think that, you know, he has a lot of leadership qualities about him, and I think that's something that they need. I think that's something that they immediately looked like they lacked out there the other night. They just looked very disorganized on both sides of the ball, and those are the moments where those guys on your team are supposed to get everyone together and, you know, kind of get them emotionally straight to play the game. You know, the only moment that ECU was in this game or had a prayer in this game the other night was when Sirk took a late hit. Well after the play, he was down on the turf for a while and got up and he was really fired up. You know, he was trying to get the crowd into it. Maybe the only time all night that the crowd was really into the game. But in keeping with the game, they lined up and the first play from scrimmage was an interception. So, you know, they would have to play the game of their lives, quite honestly. I usually wouldn't say that, but compared to what we just saw the other night, they'd have to play the game of their lives to be in this game on Saturday.
Well, who else on offense do you think can affect this game? I mean, obviously, Sirk, the quarterback, has the biggest impact, but who else on offense do we need to look at?
Jimmy Williams is probably the best receiver overall on this team, number 81. He's a senior. He's played quite a bit. He played in Zay Jones' shadow last year and had a big year behind Zay, which is obviously tough to do when Zay was being thrown the ball constantly. You know, he's a bright spot. Devon Grayson is another senior receiver that's a really good player. He was injured last year all year, so he's kind of finding his way back in. Probably the big guy, the playmaker that's been missing for a long time is Trayvon Brown. He's a junior receiver, a big guy, a big playmaking kind of guy that can get out and above coverage a lot of times and make catches. But he was not only academically ineligible last year, but he had a neck injury when he was eligible. So he's been away from the field for a while, but he is back. He was back for the James Madison game. It was pretty good. And then, of course, on offense, you have to look at running back, and there's still a lot of question marks there. They have a Clemson transfer named Tyshawn Dye that we understood was going to play quite a bit last week and ended up not carrying the ball one time. So I think there are a lot of questions like that are yet to be answered, but there's talent there. It's just, it's a matter of whether they can play together.
Well, you mentioned talent. I mean, East Carolina for a while, there was probably the best football program in the state. I mean, you look at Duke, North Carolina, NC State, Wake Forest, you wouldn't rate them as highly as what East Carolina was doing there in the mid 2000s. But,
right.
You know, has the recruiting aspect fallen off, or do you think it's just Montgomery getting used to the head coaching, the head coaching job?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, as I'm sure you would agree, recruiting and National Signing Day and all things dealing with recruiting, it's always hard to tell right away what the impact is. It's
right.
Usually something
right.
You can look back in a couple of years and say, yeah, they fell off with recruiting there, you could tell. You know, I don't necessarily think that's true. I think really what it is it's been a tough transformation. Scotty is way more of an NFL-minded coach. I mean, they're taking snaps under center, at least some now. And they really, you know, his approach is definitely more of a business approach, whereas with Ruff, it was a family approach. It was, you know, I'm here for you guys. Whatever you need, I'm here. Scotty Montgomery is more of, you want to come see me, make it about kind of guy. And I'm going to say it's bad. It's just, it's a completely different approach. So I think he had a lot of guys that were buying into that weren't about that mentality. And you're going to lose some of those guys, either actually lose them to transfers or lose them in terms of they're not going to probably be impact players on your team. So I think that, you know, right now what you have a combo of with this team, and maybe they will ultimately play well together, but They have a huge combination of transfers, junior college, grad transfers, traditional transfers in a couple cases. And you're mixing those with a lot of redshirt freshmen that these guys, this coaching staff signed a year ago, their first year here, that they're really trying to push through because they have been recruited more to play in that style of system. So I think there's some growing pains. I think that, you know, that was evident the other night. Again, it was almost a cliche of 11 guys doing different things a lot of the time.
Well, last question before I get you out of here again. This is Nathan Sommer from the Daily Reflector down in Greenville, North Carolina. Now, we've kind of talked about this in our podcast and with other friends. This is kind of a renewed rivalry of sorts. I mean, we've had a couple decently long series in the 90s and 2000s. The fans think anything of playing West Virginia again?
I'm sorry, say again?
The fans think anything about, you know, they get to play West Virginia again. I mean,
it's
not a
rivalry
per se, but yeah, it's not really a rivalry, but, you know, it's fun.
Not very good. I was going to say it's not much of a rivalry, but, yeah, I mean, I think
absolutely.
I think that it's probably not everyone's favorite game this week, as I mentioned, given the way things went. I think this is a nightmare game for most ECU fans right now. But, yeah, I think that one thing that will always define East Carolina football, at least in my experience of covering this team, is that their true character is the upset specialist. I mean,
right.
They're a team that obviously has won its way into the national spotlight a few times over. The teams that you mentioned of the mid-2000s, the ones that actually beat West Virginia and beat North Carolina multiple times and NC State multiple times, Virginia Tech multiple times. But, yeah, I think it takes a while to build that up, and I think fans here realize that this is not that time. So this is when it's really tough to play those games. And I wouldn't say they don't have hope. I think fans always have hope. But, I think Saturday night against JMU was very sobering, especially knowing that they're 0-13 all-time at West Virginia.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time. Again, thank you very much for joining us. And are you coming up to Morgantown to cover the game, or are you going to stay back in Greenville?
I'll be there, yep. I'll be there.
Oh, very nice. Well, safe travels to Morgantown. I hope you enjoy it. We have a lot of people from our smokingmusket.com who will be up there. So if you need anything, let us know. We'll hook you up.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Well, Mountaineer fans, that again was Nathan Sommer from the Greenville Daily Reflector down there in Greenville, North Carolina. I have a friend who writes there, and he gave me Nathan's contact information, so I'm very glad to have him. Again, I'm Bart Keeler. I don't think I got to introduce myself. Sorry, we were a little behind in the start. Mike is out today. He actually had to work, so he's been dying all week, and now they call him into work. I guess that's his luck. But again, I'm Bart Keeler, and hopefully you're a bygotter listening to the Smoking Musket podcast. I'm still a little bit recovering, too, and my voice is a little out of there. I've got kind of a sinus infection. This hurricane weather has really played with a lot of people's sinuses. But I'm still here ready to prepare you for this Saturday's game between the Mountaineers and the Pirates. Again, that was Nathan Sommer, who joined us from the Daily Reflector. I'm going to bring in John Lowe, who is obviously you remember him from his time here on the Smoking Musket podcast, covering basketball. He still writes for us. He is going to join me here in a little bit, but I do want to take you through all of the WVU sports headlines that I can. But before I do that, just remind you to follow us at Smoking Musket on Twitter. Go to www.smokingmusket.com for daily news and opinions on Mountaineer sports. You can subscribe to the iPod here on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. And, I mean, we're here to give you entertainment. I hope that we entertained you all in the week leading up to Virginia Tech. Clearly, that was a lot of motivation for us to put out good content, and we got a lot of visits to our site and a lot of comments, so we appreciate all that. Appreciate the Twitter and the Facebook interaction that we had as well and the site visits, so very much appreciative of that. But as I mentioned, I want to take you through some WVU sports headlines. So to start things off, let's talk about the hard court. WVU basketball has been awarded a flex start time for the SEC Big 12 Challenge game against Kentucky. The game will tip at either 4:30 or 7 p.m. So clearly the marquee matchup of the day will be held in Morgantown. Mind you that the Sunday after that, West Virginia's women's basketball team, whose Big 12 conference schedule was released last week, the Mountaineers will face Baylor on Sunday after the Big 12 SEC Challenge game that brings Kentucky to the Coliseum. So two amazingly huge games in the WVU Coliseum in the matter of a couple days. WVU women's soccer defeated number one Penn State 2-1 last Saturday and Wright State 2-0 on Labor Day. The Mountaineers are now ranked number three in the United Soccer Coaches poll. They will host Duke on Friday at 8 p.m. and Richmond on Sunday afternoon at 1, both at Dick Dulesk Soccer Stadium. Jorge Cantania, a junior transfer to the WVU men's soccer team, was named the NCAA Division I Men's Soccer Player of the Week this week, for his three assists in the team's 4-1 win over Wright State last Friday. Senior Jad Arslan also made the team of the week with a brace against Wright State, pushing his total tally on the season to 4 goals already. We've played 4 games and he scored 4 times. WVU is now ranked number 14 in the UCS poll this week and will take on UCF this Saturday at 7 p.m. at Dick Dulesk Soccer Stadium. And finally, the WVU football team falls out of the top 25 in both the coaches and AP polls, which was kind of expected after their loss to Virginia Tech. However, Will Greer was named Big 12 Newcomer of the Week as he threw for 371 yards and 3 touchdowns in the season opener. So now that we've hit those headlines, I just want to thank you all again for listening here on Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to the Smoking Musket podcast. Hopefully you've been around us for a while. You know what we're about. But, you know, we do this every week. And we tried to do a live call-in show actually it was yesterday. Now I'm recording on Thursday. We tried to do it on Wednesday. And unfortunately, we did not get the response really that we wanted. But I still enjoyed it. Mike and I enjoyed being able to talk live on air together and for you all. So I hope you listened in at least. But I do want to remind you that we will be doing a live call-in and review show after every game this season. This week, after the East Carolina game, we'll be doing it on Monday. So what this will do is allow us to talk to you more about the upcoming opponent as opposed to just spending a lot of time, you know, breaking down what happened in the game and being frustrated. We have an entire show devoted to that. So as I say that, we're going to transition and really talk about this East Carolina-West Virginia game. And so to do that, I'm going to bring on a good friend of the program, a great writer and contributor to www.smokingmusket.com, John Lowe. John, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing just fantastic. It's great to be back on the Smoking Musket podcast after
however long it's been.
Yeah.
I know. Well, it's been since basketball season at least, so I'm glad to hear your voice again.
Well, that's very, very nice. Thank you, Bart. I really appreciate it.
Well, yeah. Give the listeners, I mean, you've had a couple of big life improvements, if you will, in the terms of your career. So give them a little bit about what you are doing now with your reporting life.
Well, I'm kind of semi-retired from the Smoking Musket. I mean, I'm helping out here and there, but I've kind of had some other things come up. It's kind of taken me out of being able to do that as much as I'd like to. Right now, I'm one of the assistant sports editors at the DA, the Daily Athenaeum, the student paper at WVU. And also check us out, thedailyathenaeum.com/sports, and follow at the DA Sports on Twitter and the DA Sports on Instagram. We got a lot of good content from a lot of good aspiring writers. And another thing that I'm doing, I am the first time, I believe, in the history of the Herald Dispatch that had a WVU reporter, WVU beat reporter, and I filled that position. I'm kind of like the Mike Casaza of Huntington, if you want to go that
far. Well,
they've
got to sell papers, so they should put content in there someone wants to read.
Oh, I can't.
I have
no comment.
I kid. But we're glad to have you back on here again. Obviously, you have a lot of insight into this WVU football team. Real quick, you went to Maryland as well this past weekend for the Virginia Tech game. What were your overall opinions and thoughts from the team? We can talk about the game in total, but we already did that once this week. But just your overall impression of the team after the first game.
I'm impressed. I mean, I know it was a loss, and to the worst of opponents possible, I did not want to lose to Virginia Tech. But, you know, that being said, I was still very impressed with the effort. You know, I thought, well, you know, if I'm Tom Herman or Cliff Kingsbury or Lincoln Riley, you know, watching that game on Sunday, I'm like, wow, this Will Grier kid is for real. So, yeah, I was really impressed by that. Some other thoughts coming out of the game. FedEx Field really needs to improve on their parking.
Yeah.
I would have been able to make it to the tailgate had it not been for the dang parking. Cause I left downtown DC at like 4:30. I didn't get to my seat until like 6:45.
We had a lot of complaints about Landover and FedEx Field, that's for sure. And apparently Shane Lyons came out and said that they're definitely going to have to reevaluate where they do neutral site games to make sure they can handle our fan base and the passionate fans that we have. Look, we got to talk about this East Carolina game, which, you know, we could spend days talking about what happened in the Virginia Tech game and what did it, but you got to close the book on that, and you've got to look forward to this East Carolina game on Saturday. For all you listening at home, it's WVU versus ECU on Saturday, September 9th, a noon kickoff at Mylan Fiskars Stadium. You can find the game on Fox Sports 2. So that's 2 weeks in a row we're on a channel that people can actually get outside of West Virginia. So that's good. You know, looking at this East Carolina team, I talked about it with Nathan from the Greenville Daily Reflector earlier. They lost to James Madison, and things were not pretty. I know that will give a lot of confidence to Mountaineer fans, but do you think that West Virginia is looking to prove something, or are they, you know, you got to think they want to get that bad taste of losing out of their mouth in a big way?
You'd think so, yeah. Against a team like East Carolina, I don't know how much you can do that. I actually just got off the line about an hour ago with four of the East Carolinian, which is the student paper over there. I just got off the line with four of those sports writers about an hour ago. Hopes are not high in East Carolina, obviously, after losing to James Madison. Mm-hmm. All of those guys, and I'll even give you the names, Kayla Morton, Aaron Jackson, and Chase Carroll. You know, if you want an East Carolina perspective, find them on Twitter. They're great. But I mean, they're not really too enthusiastic about this game coming up on Saturday. Just about all of them predicted that West Virginia would really blow East Carolina out. And to your point, Bart, or to the question you were originally asking, I don't think WVU can get back into the national consciousness with a huge win over East Carolina. It'll be at least until October 7th. When West Virginia will, you know, unless they hang 70 on every team they play, they won't be able to get back into the you know, national picture until they play TCU on October 7th. So, I mean, East Carolina, just I think the theme, and you're not going to hear any of the coaches say this, I think avoid any kind of letdown, you know, any kind of embarrassment.
Avoid injury. Don't get hurt.
That too.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned, we'll talk about that for a second, because I think that was going forward. The Virginia Tech game in a bubble meant a whole lot, but in terms of the entire season, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. It's not a conference loss. We still looked decent, but what it does do is put us behind the eight ball when it comes to getting into national spotlight. And, you know, as I said earlier in the headline review, yeah, we fell out of the top 25. I think everyone expected that, but you've got a game against East Carolina. That's not going to do anything for you. Game against Delaware State, not really going to do anything at all for you. And then a game against Kansas, which, you know, if Kansas is 3-0 by the time we meet up with them and we've got, you know, a chance to win in Lawrence, that might at least say, hey, okay, West Virginia beat a real team. But you're not getting into the top 25 with that. Now, granted, you've got Texas, who just lost to Maryland, and I guarantee if they beat San Jose State by a decent margin, they're somehow going to figure out how to get back in the top 25, but we won't go down that rabbit hole. But, you know, how do you think that this team prepares for an ECU, knowing that, I mean, you got to know that they lost to an FCS school 34-14 or over the weekend. You know, How do you prepare for a game like this?
I think, you know, I really couldn't answer that question because I'm not a coach, but I mean, you just have to treat it like any other game, unfortunately. I mean, that's a plain vanilla answer, but you know, that's just the way it is. You gotta treat it like another game, just to avoid any kind of embarrassment, letdown, and hopefully avoid any injuries.
Well, I think the weird thing for me here is this is a new kind of an interesting defensive front to look at. They play a base 4-2-5, which a slight variation, I guess you could say, of the 3-3-5 that we play, obviously with another down lineman. Do you think that gives Will Greer and the offense, you know, any headaches when they look at it? Or do you think that kind of the familiarity of having five defensive backs helps?
I think it helps. I you know, honestly, Bart, I'm not worried about East Carolina. I don't think Dana or Will, or I mean, I think they're just, I think they just want to get back into the national consciousness and,
right.
And, you know, do what they can to, you know, get to the next step. And then right now the next step is to beat East Carolina by four touchdowns. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. I know a lot of people were calling for more running game last game and against Virginia Tech. And, you know, we can debate about whether or not that was the right decision or not. But, you know, the numbers say that we didn't run the ball that often. James Madison rushed for 422 yards against him. Now, granted, they rushed the ball 44 times. But they had three touchdown runs of 60-some, 70-some, and 80-some yards. Do you think that, from a fan slash just an analyst standpoint, do you think West Virginia needs to get back to the run game to be successful? And do you think this is a good game to try it out?
Well, I think this will be a
two-pronged
game
question,
to try it
I
out.
Suppose.
I think, you know, I don't think this is the – I mean – obviously, you want to try it out in a game like this because, you know, James Madison ran all over East Carolina on Saturday. So this is the game to do that, and I'm, you know, to test those kind of things out. But I mean, I don't think you'd really learn. You'd learn about players.
Yeah.
You wouldn't learn about your strategy very much because East Carolina's rush defense is pretty weak.
Well, I mean, you're right, and I think the 4-2-5 actually hurts them in that because they don't have a big, they don't have a great presence on the second level. But look, we didn't have a great presence in the second level. I thought, you know, we did a good job of stuffing the run at the line, but a lot of times when Virginia Tech backs got into our second and third level, they were gone. How do we, you know, again, this is East Carolina, and the next game is Delaware State, so it's really hard to work on these things, but. What do you need to see from our defense to give you a little bit more confidence going forward? Because I wasn't super confident in our defense after the Virginia Tech game.
Wow, that's a good question.
I know, it's you like know, it's East Carolina, but like, what do you want to see? What gives you confidence after this game, looking forward?
I want to see more than just Kaiser now, Rashid Benton doing stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, that makes sense.
I mean, because, you know, if you were there, Kaiser has some great hits. But, yeah, you need to kind of show how deep we are
right.
On Saturday. And you know, East Carolina, you're not going to learn much as a team. You're gonna see it. I almost am kind of, and I don't mean any disrespect to East Carolina, but I just got off the phone with those other guys. They're not too keen on it either. This is really a scrimmage. So
right.
Same thing with Delaware.
Well, we got two of them in a row now. You know.
We've yeah.
Got two in a row.
Yeah, we got a couple of scrimmages. I don't know about Kansas. That one might be a road scrimmage.
Well, you know, you talk about that though. Individual performances. These no one on our team had more than 8 tackles on Saturday. I know we're a good defense and we play team defense, but to me that we got it went 8, and I think there were a couple other guys with like 5. We didn't tackle well. So maybe from an individual's perspective, you just work on freaking tackling the guy in front of you. Catch the ball.
Right. Well, look, Mark, I mean, I as much as I hate to say it because it's Virginia Tech, let's not discount how good they played that night. Josh Jackson.
That's true.
He played a lot more mature than he went in on paper. And Cam Phillips is a great receiver. You know, you can't discount those guys at all.
Right.
So I'm still confident in our defense. I really am. I'm not too worried about them. And we have no more non-conference games of note left on the schedule.
Right.
And I think
right.
the West Virginia defense goes up against any in the Big 12.
Well, now here's an interesting point, I think, to this game that, you know, when you schedule these non-conference games, you schedule them obviously years out. So back when we scheduled this game, East Carolina was a decent team. If East Carolina were at that level still, do you think this game could help us get back into the national prominence? Do you think this game would actually mean something?
Oh, absolutely. If they were as good as they were when this game was scheduled, because I believe when they scheduled them, it was the year that they beat Virginia Tech and beat South Carolina and NC State, and they went up to like 15th. And this game, you know, the Saturday, this game would be a lot like last year's BYU game, probably, except it's a Morgantown.
That's interesting that you say that, because I think I understand what you're going with this. Continue. I like this.
Okay. BYU is always – I mean, they're not a Power 5, really. It kind of depends on what their schedule is. They kind of jump up and down between, you know, de facto Power 5 status. But, you know, they're always in the national consciousness. And that's how that would have been, you know, had East Carolina been this good. And we'd be learning a lot more
right.
about our team if East Carolina were competitive, but unfortunately they're not. They're kind of a team under transition with Scotty Montgomery taking over from Ruffin McNeil.
Yeah. Well, I mean, offensively, we did all right. I mean, we outgained Virginia Tech by a ton, more than 100 yards. But, you know, from an offensive perspective, what do you want to see in this game that will, you know, say, okay, we got things kind of going now? I mean, again, it's East Carolina, we get it, but what do you want to see from, you know, an individual or something?
I'd like to see more catches. I thought there were a lot of catchable passes that were just dropped. I don't think Will Greer's placement was bad. I thought most of the incompletions he had weren't on him.
Okay.
So I would like to see more catches.
Yeah,
I'd like to see special teams improve significantly.
Oh boy.
And, yeah.
I would like to see us make two touchbacks. I would like to see I would like to have two touchbacks on a kickoff, because we had one last game. So if we can go two.
I'd like to have a field goal that doesn't need help by the field goal post. As well, that would be...
I will give Molina a little bit of credit there. I mean, it is hard. I get it; he's a kicker, but you know, you go out there, and you get lined up, and then you have a false start, like or a delay a game. So, you know, I think he was a little like, "Oh crap!" after that, but he made it. It went in.
Mm-hmm.
He hit the one that he was asked to make. He didn't miss two like the other kicker. but you're right. I mean, hopefully, we don't have to kick that many field goals. To be quite honest, hopefully, we don't have to rely
hopefully.
On field goals.
As hard as it would be to imagine, I would love to see Dana Holgorsen control himself. That'd be fantastic.
I thought that he might be a little bit better at it now that he's the head coach, but maybe now this frees him up to do the crazy stuff that he did on Saturday. I want to bring up this interesting kind of understory here. Back in 2015, Will Greer at Florida actually played East Carolina. They came out with a 31-24 win over ECU in Gainesville. Now, granted, ECU was playing under Ruffin McNeil. That was 2015. I think they won 9 games that season. They won more than 7. 2015 was their 5-7 season. So you had a 5-7 East Carolina team.
No, so that wouldn't make
Take
sense
Florida.
If he had 9 wins and got, you know.
Yeah.
Because that was his last
season
there.
That was the 5-7 season. Yeah, that was 2015. So that was the 5-7 season that got Ruffin McNeil fired. Will Greer comes in. Now, granted, he's still splitting a little bit of time with Treyon Harris, but 31-24, 10-17, 151 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. The line is all right, but Obviously, things are very different, but, you know, that's just a little bit of a weird storyline that I wanted to point out, that Will Grier has played before, has played East Carolina before. And, yeah, I lost my train of thought there for a second. I was like, where did I scroll up? Now I'm lost. going through my notes again. Their offense gives us a lot of looks. I think this is the one positive I can look at this game. Their offense, they go under center, they go from the gun, they kind of run RPO, they kind of throw the ball. From a defensive standpoint, do you think this gives them a little bit of good practice at recognizing and adjusting to offenses? Because you get in the Big 12, you're going to have to recognize and adjust a whole lot.
I don't know.
I mean, they've got a very experienced, you know, quarterback there, Thomas Cirque. He's the grad transfer from Duke. So he played a pretty decent season at Duke. I'm hoping that they give us something that we can actually use to build off of. That's what I'm trying to get out of here.
Yeah. I mean, Thomas Cirque, I mean, he's a Cutcliffe product just like the Manning brothers. So, I mean,
yep.
So I don't really – I didn't really catch much of the East Carolina game. I tried to watch some of it on Watch ESPN, and as the guys, I was on the Raspy Voice Kids podcast too. They said, you know, waste of time. It was abysmal. I
watched it at work because it was easy to watch at work. Nothing exciting.
Yeah, well, it was pretty good background noise.
Yeah, basically.
So, yeah. Sorry, I wish I could give you more insight on East Carolina.
No, it's hard. We're trying to milk a cow that's dead, you know? I mean, it's just not giving us much. Well, you know, I do want to hit on this. We're back at home. It's a gold rush. Do you think that this can all prepare us for a team like maybe Baylor or maybe Iowa State or Kansas where, okay, we get it. You're not great, but we still have to prepare well and come out and beat you. Do you think that maybe this is one of those games where it's like, hey, guys, you still have to do the job?
I'd say that more about Baylor than Iowa State.
Well, okay, true.
Yeah,
we'll get to some picks in a little bit. I think Iowa State might win this weekend. But anyway.
I do wonder
how this game sets up for us, though. How do you, I mean, what does it model for the rest of the season? Is it Baylor? Is Baylor ECU this season?
Yeah, I think it's going to be like this for Baylor. I think it's going to be like this for Kansas, for sure, Delaware State.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, try not to be too lackadaisical about preparing for these games. You know, there are good coaches everywhere. There are good players everywhere. It just takes one or two breakout plays, and then you got a ball game. So
yeah,
you don't want that to happen against a team like East Carolina or Baylor. I'm sorry, I love how I'm having
no,
Baylor
you're right,
and Carolina in the same thought.
I mean, Baylor clearly is, you know, better talent and everything, but I think, look, they lost to Liberty, okay? Until they don't lose to Liberty. We'll wrap it up.
I don't know about
this.
You, Bart.
Yeah.
I was just saying, I don't know about you, Bart, but like, I think it's just so funny when they scheduled that game. They scheduled it, this is the typical Baylor. We're gonna beat an FCS opponent, and then we're gonna play like two gimmies, and then the gimmies are beating Baylor.
Yep. It's great. It's not even irony. It's just karma. I think is the best way to put that. It's just great karma.
Yeah.
We'll wrap it up with this, though. I mean, you got East Carolina and West Virginia on Saturday at noon. The Mountaineers have to come out here and take care of business. East Carolina 0-1, West Virginia 0-1. So, you know, you got to get in the positive column here in the win-loss. You know, this is the game to do it. Go out there and do the job. That's the way I'm approaching it. Go do your job at every position.
Okay, so you're going to Bill Belichick out. Okay, that's pretty gutsy for an Atlanta fan.
Well, it works, unfortunately, damn it. But we'll stop talking about East Carolina, West Virginia enough, and we'll transition to the rest of the Big 12 this week. A couple of decent highlight marquee games this weekend, actually, for the Big 12. Big 12 did not have a good week last week. We mentioned Baylor losing. Texas lost to Maryland. No one else of note really won. We were the only real big non-conference game, and we couldn't do our job for the Big 12. But nice slate of games here for the Big 12 to maybe regain some positive reputation, if you will. It starts on Friday. This is the weirdest frickin' game of the season. Sorry. Friday, September 8th. You heard that right. A Friday. Oklahoma State travels to South Alabama for an 8 o'clock kick in Mobile. The hell. I don't know how that game got scheduled that way or why. But, I mean.
Miami had a game like that last year, too. They played at Appy State.
They went to App State. App State's in the same time zone. But wait, no, sorry. South Alabama and Oklahoma State on the same time zone. App State and Miami are at least on the same coast. But, it's weird. Any insight, thoughts about this game? I mean, is Oklahoma State just going to roll them?
I should hope so. I mean, I should hope so. This is my insight. This is my insight, Bart. StubHub. You got on StubHub, tickets are $15. So if you're in the Mobile, Alabama area, go catch some Big 12 football.
Hey, I've been to that game. I went to Ladd Peoples Stadium for the GMAC Bowl in Mobile for the East Carolina Marshall game, the bowl game that, like, Marshall came back from, like, 30-some points down. So I was there for that game. Mobile, it's not the worst place to go. It's New Orleans light, but it's all right. That's all I got about that game. That's all I have.
Fair enough.
The noon kickoff on Saturday, September 9th, we've got Iowa at Iowa State, the battle for the big corn husk thing. I don't really know what they give out, but I assume it's corn. So noon on ESPN2, Iowa versus Iowa State. I think Iowa State wins this game. It's in Ames. I think they can do it.
I agree. Iowa had trouble with Wyoming. So
yes.
Yeah, and Iowa State's turning a corner. They got Jacob Park, the transfer out of Georgia, under center.
Yeah, UGA transfer.
So
that's all I got. I think we both agree Iowa State can take that game. Then also at noon, in Manhattan, Kansas, Charlotte travels to take on Kansas State. Now Charlotte's an up and coming program. They have only played like 5 years. UNC Charlotte, beautiful stadium. But, I mean, Kansas State, is this one of those games where they run a drive for 13 minutes? Or do you think that Charlotte won't be able to contain them long enough?
It's going to be similar to what they did to Central Arkansas last week, I think. Charlotte.
Yeah, it'll be ugly. You can go home early. It's great. You'll only spend like 3 hours at a game. It's great.
Yeah.
Following that, 3:30 kick on CBS. So this is CBS's prime TV spot when they do college football. TCU at Arkansas. That was a hell of a fun game last year that TCU was not able to fully compete with Arkansas, but they gave it their all. Any different this year for TCU and Arkansas? Obviously, it's a new location, but can TCU get some revenge?
I don't think so.
Really?
I think it's going to be Arkansas. I mean, I know they got Kenny Trill. I know they got a couple of guys coming back as receivers, but I don't think they can beat Arkansas. Not in Fayetteville. If it were in Fort Worth, maybe they'd win, but I don't think they can beat Arkansas.
Yeah. Well, Brett Bielema getting ready to call some hogs.
I don't know why TCU is ranked.
Because they won a game.
Morgantown High School could beat Jackson State.
yeah. So, well, I don't know about that, but you're right.
Hot takes.
The big game in Austin, San Jose State travels to Texas. Play the Longhorns at 3:30 on the station that no one can get, even in Texas. First question. I have three questions about this game. First question. Can Texas beat San Jose State?
Yeah.
Okay. Do they cover? The line is 26.
No.
Does Texas get ranked when they beat San Jose State?
Oh, heck no. Oh, heck no.
They're back. I don't understand.
Did you see what San Jose State did to South Florida?
I don't understand how they were ranked 23rd. How in the hell was that team who did not have a good record last year, is breaking in a new coach, how do they go to 23rd to start the season? Dumb.
You're missing a big part of that. You're missing a part of that. They lost to Kansas last year.
Yes, last year. Granted, it was at Kansas. I get it, but they lost to Kansas last year. Like, they were not good at football last year. They were not good at football for 3 years, which is why they fired their coach and got the one who's there now. Tom Herman is not a miracle worker. Houston was kind of good before he got there. Sorry about it. Anyway, not spending all my rage at Texas because they're not worth it. Anyway, now here to me, this is interesting because Central Michigan at 4 p.m. kickoff at Kansas, can they go 2-0 against the Big 12? They beat Oklahoma State last year. Stillwater.
No,
okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
They had trouble putting Rhode Island away.
Yeah. All right, so Chippewas lose. I'm okay with that one, too. All right. Let's see. Do I want to go chronological or do I want to go? Yeah, we'll do this.
Save the best for
UTSA.
Last one. Save the best.
Yeah, that's what I say. Texas San Antonio at Baylor. Again, does Baylor win?
I don't know. I don't know anything about UTSA because their game got canceled because of Hurricane Harvey. I'll probably say Baylor wins because Liberty is basically a Conference USA team. So,
okay, they got a good coach. Turner Gill's a good coach.
Yeah, all right.
They're
basically Baylor light. So,
all right, we'll take. Okay, so we'll both say Baylor wins that game. I think Baylor has to win that game. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, for sure.
They have to.
Absolutely.
Matt Rhule can't go 0-2 against teams that don't matter. All right, so the best for last. 7:30 p.m. kickoff on ABC, a rematch of last year, Oklahoma at Ohio State. Both teams looked pretty good in their first game against, Oklahoma played Tulsa. Ohio State came from behind after a very sketchy first three quarters to beat Indiana. Can Oklahoma pull off the upset in the Big Horseshoe?
I think they're capable, but I don't know if they will. This is a must-win game for Lincoln Riley and Oklahoma, and this is a must-win game for the Big 12 Conference. If Oklahoma doesn't win this game, we are back to the Big 12 on the outside looking in, because even in week one,
right,
unless Oklahoma State comes out of nowhere, this isn't going to happen, because West Virginia, a one-loss West Virginia, and I hate to say it, guys, one-loss West Virginia,
we're not getting
in the college football playoffs.
No.
We probably couldn't even get in there undefeated just because we're West Virginia. One-loss
and
Oklahoma,
we're in the Big 12.
We'll struggle to get in. So without this, there is no – the Big 12 will get further scrutinized. And if Ohio State wins, you pretty much seal the deal. The Big 12 will eventually expand. So this is a must-win game for the Big 12.
All right. Well, I don't know if Oklahoma can go into Ohio State and win. I think they can. I don't think they do. I think Ohio State is really good. I don't think they're as good as people say they are, but I think they are very good. And I just don't think Oklahoma has it all put together. I think Lincoln Riley, this being his first big test, I don't know if he can pass it. I just don't. So there goes the Big 12 schedule. Obviously, West Virginia plays East Carolina this Saturday. Again, that is a noon kickoff at Milan Puskar Stadium. It is a gold rush, so if you're going to the game, wear gold. John, I appreciate you joining me tonight.
I appreciate being on, Bart. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining. Thanks for filling in for Mike. You did an admirable job filling in for our site manager.
glad to do it for you, man.
Again, thanks to Nathan Summers.
One more thing. Check out the DA Sports Online, daonline.com/sports.
Thank you. DA.com, daonline.com/sports. And thanks for listening to this edition of the Smoky Musket Podcast. We'll be back with you on Monday for the live call-in and review show. Yes, I wanted to end the...